You're listening to Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net.
You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Doug Gefeller.
Good afternoon, and welcome to today's episode of Critical Mass, the Coaching Perspective. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. Today is Thursday, so we're talking about coaching. Before we start, let me just remind you that my business partner, Rick Franzi, and I co-host the Critical Mass radio shows, which air every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 4 p.m., and all are brought to you live right here on octalkradio.net. If you'd like to participate in today's calls, let me give you our number, our call-in number, 949-713-6443 or 949-713-6447. Feel free to call in with a question or just to weigh in with an opinion. Well, I'm the lead partner for our coaching practice, a master certified coach, a past president of the Orange County chapter of the International Coach Federation, and I'm here to welcome our guest for today, who's Patricia Welsh, who is the human resource director for MagnaFlow right here locally in Rancho Santa Margarita. Welcome, Patty.
Hi, thank you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you with us here today.
Well, it's nice to be here as well.
I understand you've had a busy week, so hopefully we'll give you 30 or 40 minutes of a break from your regular routine here.
Okay, thanks.
Well, let's just start right out, and why don't you share with our audience kind of how you came to work at MagnaFlow and how you came to be involved in HR?
Oh, okay, well, HR, I don't really like to tell the story because it goes back a little while, but I got started when I was in college, started with my first job, what I would call a real job, as a Girl Friday, so I know that dates me a little bit, but I went from there as a Girl Friday working for an operations director in a retail establishment, to working for the HR director, and when I was working towards graduating, I found that I really enjoyed what she had me doing, which was more of assistant duties, but she started having me work more with her on recruiting and training efforts. So I started out, I was with a company called Charlotte Russe, and they were privately held at the time and had about, maybe 10 stores. And I got transferred up to the Orange County region where I was responsible for hiring all of the and training all of the new hires. And that's where I kind of got started with more of HR duties, and we're still reported to the HR director, but did the initial interviews and trained the new staff as we opened up new stores. And then from there, they found as the company grew, they needed someone to oversee the training and recruiting going on forward from there. So I took over a region and went from there to take over a couple of regions. And from there, I felt that personally I needed to move back up to Orange County. I was working in San Diego at the time, and I left Charlotte Russe after almost 10 years and took on a job where I was responsible for the recruiting and training and benefits for a software company called Orion Scientific, which is also privately held. Both companies have since been sold and bought by larger companies, and Orion was a software company that did some government contracting and things like that. So again, responsible for recruiting, but now in a software environment. And I really found that I enjoyed the recruiting aspect, and benefits was new to me at the time. So I went through some training classes with PIRA and SHRM, got up to speed on what I needed to do there, and then started doing some consulting on my own through some personal contacts I had. And that's where I came in contact with MagnaFlow. So I was working at another company, doing some consulting on the side, and when Orion got bought out, I went on board with another company, but was really kind of hoping that eventually MagnaFlow would bring me on full-time as they grew, and that's what happened. About 6 years ago, MagnaFlow called me and said they were ready to bring on a full-time HR director. So that's how I got started with MagnaFlow, and again, a privately held company that had grown and is still privately held and will probably continue to be so. Is back to privately held. I think that's where I'm happy.
You know, and I know a lot of people that are involved in publicly traded companies, and they would be very happy in privately held companies.
So. Yeah, I think it's a different environment when you know the person that you're talking to that's across the desk from you is the owner of the company, and he's the one where it's his passion, it's his development, and it's his livelihood, but it's mostly, it was his brainchild, and you're sitting there able to come up with ideas and bounce ideas around and hear firsthand the direction that the company's going in rather than dealing with the stockholders and board of directors and that kind of thing.
And, you know, I would imagine that as far as HR goes, that probably makes a huge difference in the HR department, where you're dealing directly with the owner, who in a privately held company kind of wants his stamp, his image, his culture on the company.
Oh, yes, yes, definitely. Well, I mean, it has its challenges, too, because sometimes the things you hear, you have to be careful not to share them. You know, some of the things are just ideas and thoughts that haven't been put into practice yet, and it's just the sounding board. As to, in any position in HR, you have to be careful of what you share with employees and how you convey it, because the way it comes out between an owner and an HR director might be differently received by a staff-level employee or even, in our case, a manufacturing-level employees.
Absolutely. Well, look, before we get too far, tell us a little bit about MagnaFlow so people know what it is they do and how that impacts your role in HR.
Oh, okay. Well, I said we've been around for 30 years. Started off making catalytic converters in the automotive aftermarket. And really, that's still our bread and butter. That's what we do. Replacement parts for cars. To the layman, I would say, you know, I don't know a whole lot about cars myself personally, but it's basically the device that you need in order to pass smog. That's what we're making. So you don't need one. You don't want one, but you need one. If you need to go pass the smog test, or if your car is out of warranty and you need a new one, you are looking for a quality product at a good price, and that's what we provide. So that's where we started off, but then we also went off in a new direction with the performance market, and a lot of people were interested in making their cars sound louder, have better performance, better gas mileage, faster speed, and just look nice, too. The tailpipe coming out the back when you buy it from the manufacturer sometimes isn't so pretty, so we make a nice stainless steel tip. All of our parts are stainless steel, and everything's made here in America, so kind of unique. A lot of manufacturing companies have chosen to go elsewhere, but MagnaFlow is still manufactured here in California, and we're pretty proud of our company. We're a leader in the industry in the aftermarket area, and we've got about 280 employees between four locations, and here where I work at the corporate office most of the week is sales and marketing and IT, finance, HR, and basic administrative staff support. And then we have an R&D facility here also in Rancho Santa Margarita, where we do all the product development. They get the vehicles in, and they basically make the part to fit the car and come up with the drawing so that the manufacturing staff down in Oceanside, where we have about 200 employees, can make the product. They're the ones who actually make the product that gets put in the box and shipped out to the customers.
Okay, wonderful description. Thank you. And your role there involves all four locations and everything from administrative, sales, research, to manufacturing personnel?
Yes, yes, it does. And it's a busy job, but I think that one thing that we do well here is we're very lean, and everyone, we know what areas we're supposed to be responsible for, but that doesn't mean that we can't cross over and assist other people in other areas. So I'm involved. It depends on what's going on in each department. One time a year, it might be really busy in sales, and we're looking to hire new people there, or we're looking to bring on new benefits programs that will benefit them. So we'll focus real heavily in that direction. Or manufacturing right now, we're going through implementing some new training programs and making sure that we're top-notch in terms of making sure everyone that we bring on board is trained properly for all the positions that they're in, regardless of the level of detail. And so there's a lot of focus right now in manufacturing. And when we just relocated our manufacturing plant down to Oceanside less than a year ago. So that was quite an effort. After being in Rancho Santa Margarita for close to 30 years and then moving, even though it's only 40 miles south, you got a lot of people that, you know, they have to make decisions as to whether that's in the best interest of their family and if they have other jobs and things like that. But the one thing that we do have to offer, regardless of where people go, whether it's here or 40 miles south, is stability. We've been very successful, and the environment that we provide is terrific. We challenge everyone, and I think that the one thing I'm really of many things I'm thankful for is the fact that the company makes it very easy for me. We take very good care of people. We have a great benefits program, and the management really cares about the employees. And I think for me, it makes my job so much more pleasant to be able to convey that to people and to really mean it.
That's wonderful. So tell me, you know, with the tough economic times that have been facing a lot of companies, how did that impact your personnel and the kind of decisions you had to make from an HR perspective?
Well, in terms of our company, we really didn't, I hate to say it, but we really didn't feel the downturn very much. Because we were pretty well diversified with replacement parts and also performance parts, you know, one may have taken a little bit of a dip, but the other one went on an upswing. So overall, our business was good, and a lot of people around us were laying people off and having to cut back and become real lean. And while we're lean every single day, we had no need to lay off any of our staff. We were able to continue to offer the same benefits, you know, upon benefit renewal. We didn't have to pass any of the benefit increase costs along to our employees. We were able to continue to cover that. And from an impact of the economy, the only way I would think that it has really impacted me is on my recruiting. I think there's a misconception out there that because the economy is the way that it is, that it's easier to find people. It might be easier to find some people, but the people who are the most useful to companies and the most productive are, for the most part, still employed. So it is a market of more supply, but is it a quality supply? You know. And I know there's a lot of people out there out of work, and I'm not trying to knock any of them, but I think that the more that those people can do to really try to get letters of recommendation and to really let the people they're interviewing with understand that, you know, just being the victim of a downturn isn't enough when you're on an interview. You've really got to convince people that you're the one who was valuable to the company and they had no choice but to let you go. You know, I think that's really, really important for job seekers these days.
That's a very good tip. And, you know, that's a very confusing message that you're talking about, and I keep hearing it over and over again. I mean, there is this huge misconception that everybody's out of work and that it should be real easy to fill positions. And I talk to people that are recruiting, and they tell me that they get swamped with resumes when they advertise for a position. But when they boil it all down, they're having a difficult time finding people that meet the requirements of the jobs that they're looking for.
Right.
And that's what
right.
I hear you saying.
Yes, it's very true. It's very true.
And do you find that's true at all levels? I mean, do you find it as true in the manufacturing as you do in the sales or the research area or the administrative areas?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. In the manufacturing level, I would say even more so, because you've got people who have worked very short term at all of their jobs, and every company they went to, they were laid off, and then it starts to look like a trend, and it's hard to know if that was the person or if it's just bad circumstances, you know. And in an interview, you can only do so much. We don't do one interview, we don't even do two. For most positions, even at the manufacturing level, we do 2 to 3 interviews, and we've always been that way. We take our time to find the right candidate because our turnover is so low. In manufacturing, it's been a challenge. Like I said, we moved down to Oceanside, and we had never really experienced that much turnover before. We, you know, very, very stable workforce. But when we went down to Oceanside for manufacturing, we had some people that came on board who really didn't know who Magnaflow was. And we had to make sure that we were bringing in the right group of people, whether it's a machine operator or a welder. And we've now stabilized our workforce, and things are going real well for us. But I think a lot of people coming to us, we're just looking for a job and not necessarily wanting to have our job. We've never really been in that position before. Most people come to us because they've heard of us. They've been in the industry, whether it's as a salesperson or as a fabricator, you know, that knows the automotive market. And to have people who didn't know who we were come on board just looking for a paycheck was a little bit different for us. So, yeah, we definitely have experienced that at all levels.
I would assume that this makes your screening and your interviewing process more difficult then.
Well, I don't know if difficult from my standpoint or from the applicant's standpoint.
Well, more difficult for you to sort through to really identify the right applicants.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely has been a problem for us, but I think that it's been a good lesson for us because we've learned that we have a good group of managers, and the people that are doing the interviews with me are, regardless of what the position is, I've got the managers and the supervisors in doing those interviews with me, and we're able to collaborate. And what we found is that we're all on the same page. You know, we can sit in an interview and almost read each other as to whether we think it's the right fit or not before the person even walks out the door. And the fact that we're able to hire people that are all very hardworking, self-motivated, forward thinkers, it applies to every position, whether it's someone that I just hired as a machine operator or to operate our tool crib, all the way up to, you know, a sales director. No, it's really, the culture is the same regardless of what department that they work in. And it's been a challenge, but it's also been a good lesson for us to all kind of come together.
So, Patty, what would you say from your perspective and from your manager's perspective, what makes a good interview? What do you do that makes it a good interview? What's your secret sauce?
Well, I would say one of the things that I always do is, you know, from my standpoint as to what I think it's important from an HR standpoint, you need to let the applicants talk. I have been in many interviews with people where they start putting words in the applicant's mouth, and then when you start asking questions, the applicant knows exactly what you want. So I think to use as many open-ended questions as possible and to get them to do the talking, get them to tell you what they're looking for, what their skill set is, what their culture that they're looking at, where they've come from, and what they enjoy, rather than putting words in their mouth, because otherwise then you're going to have a tainted interview that's going to give you what you think sounds like a good candidate, but really all you listen to is yourself. So, but from the candidate standpoint, I think it's really important, and I've told the president of the company this here many times, I can go into an interview, and I've been doing it long enough that I can really tell pretty quickly if they're going to be the right person for the job. The resume tells me their skill set. Once I get them in, I can drill them a little bit more onto whether or not, you know, their skill set is real or if it's or if it's enhanced, I guess I can say, but then whether or not they're going to fit with the culture, you know, whether it's manufacturing or accounting or, you know, I go back to sales, you know, regardless of where they're going to fit, we know if they're going to really enjoy our work arrangement here. We're the type of company where we're going to give you the freedom to be successful and we're going to give you the resources to be successful. We're not micromanagers, but we're going to definitely give guidelines and give resources in terms of technology, people, and support. So if I can get people in that are going to be able to function in that environment, I can know that pretty quickly. But even if in the first 10 to 15 minutes I find that that person probably isn't going to fit in the environment, I don't want them to feel that they wasted their time, and I don't want them to feel that that they're not a good fit, because this is practice for them too. They're, for the most part, especially if they're unemployed, this is practice for them. And in many cases, if I find someone is completely off and applying for the wrong position, I'll coach them in the right direction. And I'll tell them which places to go look. I'll tell them of other people that I know that are looking, because I want to help those people. Now, ultimately, they're going to go out and they're going to say good things about MagnaFlow. They're going to promote our products. And they're going to tell people good things about it, whether it's 2 days from now or 2 years from now. They're going to remember that they met with me and what they heard about the company and the feeling that they had when they left. If they don't feel good when they walk out of this building, then I feel like I didn't do my job. It doesn't really matter if they got the job or not. My job is to send them away feeling like they are a success or they're prepared to go in a successful direction.
What a great attitude. I love it. I just love it. So
thank you.
Just to kind of finish on this conversation, when you're talking to someone and you're interviewing them, how do you describe the culture and what is it that you think attracts them? What do you tell them that makes them want to come to work for MagnaFlow?
Well, I hate to say it because sometimes I've been doing it for so long, I feel like I have like a routine of the things that I say, and I'm sure that if people ever had to sit in the same interview with me twice, they would hear the same things. But it kind of works, so I like to tell them or have them tell me all about themselves. And then at the end of the interview, I like to tell them about the company so they walk away and they know who we are, the same way I explained to you how we got started, what our product line is, how we diversified, our stability. And then I convey to them, too, about the type of employees that we like to hire, people who are self-starters and can be successful with not being micromanaged and being able to be challenged and keep themselves challenged. And I really like to try to explain to people that the turnover here, I don't have to do very many exit interviews. Most of the people that come here stay pretty long term, and they like to make a home here. And when I explain that to them, most people, especially these days, are really happy to hear about the stability of the company. And then also I explain to them the fact that we've been voted one of the top Orange County workplaces for 3 years in a row by the Orange County Register's independent study. And we have competitive salaries. We pay 100% of all of our employees' benefits, the medical, the dental, and the vision. And it's just not done anymore. People don't do that with the expensive benefits that we have these days. But it's something that our company has believed in, that if you're going to hire someone to do a job, they should be able to come to work, be properly compensated, and have their benefits paid for so that they don't have to worry about things. When they're at work, they can be 100% and not worrying about their financial obligations outside of here or their medical bills outside of here. So I try to make it really prevalent that we take good care of our employees. And we also have 100% 401k match, and that's pretty much unheard of these days anymore.
That's wonderful. That's great news, and that's good to hear. Absolutely.
Yeah, it is. And, there's some other things. Just the fact that we're privately owned and there's a family that's behind it, and we're all part of that family. We have a company picnic where we take the employees and all of their families somewhere in the summer. This year we're going to be going to SeaWorld. So we got like 1,000 people going to SeaWorld. And we do fun holiday parties. We do giveaways and prizes and quarterly luncheons. We have lunch trucks come and serve up, In-N-Out Burger or Carl's Jr., or we're having a taco truck come in a couple of weeks. So we really try to make it so that we make it a fun place to work. You know, it's business, but we also are able to, within certain parameters, make it a fun place, too.
Okay, great. Well, look, Patty, if you can hold on, we have to do a commercial break here, and then we'll be back to you in just a minute.
Sure, no problem.
All right.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
And while we're on a commercial break there, let me just remind you that this week we add the second book in our series of Critical Mass books. The first, of course, was written by my business partner, Rick Franzi, and it is The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups. It's been called The Definitive Guide to the CEO Peer Group Experience, and like everything else in the world, it's available for sale on Amazon.com. You can find it by typing in under author Richard Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I. And like I said, our second book, which will be available on Amazon later this month, is The Power of CEO Guiding Principles. And it will be available both in print and Kindle format. And of course, our third book that deals with coaching from the client's perspective will be available this summer. So let's get back to our guest today. Patty Welsh, who is the Human Resource Director for MagnaFlow, and she's been sharing with us some of the misconceptions that exist in the marketplace in today's search for the right employees. Patty, it's great to have you with us here sharing your point of view.
Thank you.
Well, look, tell me, what do you see as the big challenge in HR for your firm and for you this year?
Well, benefit costs are difficult to deal with. My executive management makes things easier on me that, for the most part, whenever our benefit costs increase, we're paying 100% of our medical, dental, and vision for our employees. We continue to do that, so I don't have to break any bad news to the employees with regard to that. Now, I'm hoping I don't have to do that again this year, but hoping that I can do that again this year, but you never know. The benefit costs are rising, and there's so much unknown out there. It really makes it difficult when you see your benefit costs going up, you know, 20, 25% every single year. And we're a manufacturing organization. A lot of our peer manufacturers have been going out of the country to do their manufacturing, and we're intent on having our product American-made. And we've been able to do that because we've implemented a lot of automation and a lot of manufacturing, lean manufacturing processes. But to be competitive in the marketplace, you have to make a quality product at a low cost. And continuing to do that, you have to find good workers that are willing to work really hard and care about what they do. And I think continuing to manufacture in California, we're going to have to continue to always be looking to improve the way we do things. And everyone here is a very strong belief in the continuous improvement strategies. And that's, I think, one of the things we're going to have to maintain and actually probably define a little bit more this year, just to be sure that we remain competitive.
Well, you know, that's certainly refreshing to hear you talk about that. I mean, we all like to see American made, and beyond that, I'm going to say I'd like to see California made, and if I could have it my way, Orange County made. I'll give San Diego a shot.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be nice. Well, we actually have some products because we're in the automotive field. We have some California standards that are required that are different than the federal standards. So we've already got California only parts that we can sell in California. So I don't know why we can't say California made as well. It only seems fair to me.
Well, look, you know, we're a coaching organization as part of what we offer besides our CEO peer group experiences. So, of course, I want to ask you, what role has coaching played in your firm? Do you use coaching? Do you use outside coaches, internal coaches?
We do a little bit of both. On a formal level, we're looking at possibly using some coaches for executive coaching and management coaching. A lot of our employees have been around in other organizations, but also some of them have been here and kind of homegrown. So trying to coach some of our managers that have been here for a while, some of that is something that I can do, but then we also are looking outside of the company to try to get some, like you said, some certified coaches, and we've used a couple of different people to come in and help us make sure that we're looking at the way that we're managing people and managing our everyday challenges to be most successful. And I think in the manufacturing environment, we've got some supervisors that we've created some more structure there and been able to bring in some really talented people. And everyone has room to grow and everyone has room to learn. And everyone from, you know, manufacturing supervisors and even including myself are looking forward to and hoping to continue to learn from others.
Let me ask you, for our coaches in the audience there, when you look at an outside coach, what is the sort of criteria? How do you look at them? What are the things you want to know?
Well, I would say we want to see what their tools are, what kind of tools they use to come in and evaluate the person, whether it's at a supervisory level, management level, or executive level, and if they have some tools that are commonly used or something that's a little bit out of the box. We're okay with either one, but we'd like to see what the results are that they're going to be delivering, and then also to tie it into the actual business itself, to see how once they do the coaching with the individual, how it actually will bring results to the business itself, how the growth of the individual will benefit the business. I think that's important because it's always great to improve individuals, but ultimately, you know, if it's the company sponsoring it, it's something that the company should see some sort of measurable results from, rather than just you know, a better attitude or things like that. There's a lot of seminars out there you can send supervisors to, where it talks about improving attitudes and things, and that's very undefinable. It's really hard to quantify what that means. And if you can coach your supervisors to have lower turnover or better performance in terms of productivity or cutting costs or increasing employee morale, those are all things that you can measure, then I think if you can tie that into the coaching, then if they have tools that you can do that with, then I think that it's going to benefit the company in the long run as well as the individual.
You know, I love to see that because there is such a misconception that coaching is just a soft skill, that it's not measurable. But I think, you know, why can't it have an ROI? Why can't you measure it? You expect that from any other service provider that you hire. I think it's a reasonable expectation out of your coaching experience also.
Yeah, I think so.
So that's good. Painful lesson that you've learned in your business career. You have one you want to share with us today?
Painful lesson. I don't know if there's been a painful lesson.
How about memorable?
Yeah, memorable. I would say that the one of the best experiences was relocating the manufacturing plant. Really getting to know the employees at a more detailed level as well, getting involved with the staff, whether it's a person who's been with the company for 15 years and has issues with family and relocation, or if it's a brand new person coming in that's just loves the company and is so enthusiastic and just not quite ready for the position that they want and trying to coach them into it. I think it's been a real memorable experience. So we've gone through a lot of growth and a lot of changes in terms of organization in the manufacturing levels, and I think things are, you know, it's good to be involved with people, and that's why I got into what I'm doing. I get to not just create policies and procedures and do reports and things like that. I get to actually go out on the manufacturing floor and work with the employees, and, you know, I'm not making mufflers or anything, but at least getting to know what the everyday concerns of the employees are, and I think that that's been a really good experience. When you relocate, you have to get a little bit more in touch with people, so you find what it is that the current people are and what they're looking for, what's going to keep them happy, and also kind of getting used to the new workforce. And it's a new area, new workforce, new demographics, and just getting to know them and what their priorities are and trying to find the right fit for all the people for there as well.
You know, a relocation is a huge thing to be involved in from an HR point of view, and from the employee's point of view, it's always a traumatic thing. So whether it's manufacturing, whether it's administrative offices, can you share with us what was, as you look back on that experience, what did you do that worked the best that you would advise people to think about doing when they're involved in a relocation? And was there something that you would definitely do different next time?
Well, I think that we were pretty realistic with our expectations as to who was going to be able to go with us and who wasn't. And I think that it can be costly if you try to do an overall relocation program. But I think if you can evaluate your key players and the talent that you have, that's where I think we were able to do that and really take a look at who we really needed. And to be able to help assist the employees, I think we did a pretty good job in helping them find housing and explaining to them the cost of living and showing them that it actually was a little less money to go down there. And convincing the employees, the people that you really that value the job and that you value, letting them know that this is a positive move for their future. Even though you're moving into a different direction, that it's going to create the stability of the company and the ability to operate in a more unified fashion when you get the manufacturing along with the distribution and get them all together. It becomes more productive. You're able to keep your costs down, and the keeping your costs down can translate to better things for employees in the long run. So I think that I think we did a pretty good job at communicating that to our employees. I think that communicating with your employees is something that can always be improved, though. So as much information to get to your employees, I would recommend the HR directors get together with all of the key players in terms of management and executive management and find out what you can put together to explain why, how, and you know, the logistics of how it's going to happen. I think basically calming everyone's nerves, like you said, making people understand that there's security in the company, that there's security in their job, and taking all the worry away from them so that they see that it's going to be a positive for everyone.
Excellent points of view and some great tips for us to think about here. You know, just before we kind of wind up, you maybe the last question I'd like to ask you is, you talk about the importance of communication, and you're dealing with a diverse workforce, from manufacturing people up to administrative and salespeople to research and development. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with four different locations. What are the tools that you use to ensure communication with your employees across the board?
Well, I hate to say we have meetings, because I'm a firm believer in that you shouldn't over-meeting people. I think that can be that can be overdone. But I think that the key people in the company, the managers and the supervisors, need to be told what's going on at different times about different things. So we have a weekly production meeting where the president, the vice president, and all the supervisors and managers in the production area get together and talk about different developments in terms of continuous improvement and how production's going. But then they're also filled in on any major changes that are taking place within the organization with product so that they know what's coming down the pipeline. And then once a week, the sales staff gets together with, the same group, executive management, VPs, president of the company, everyone in the room together, talking about what each region is doing, what each product line is doing, and keeping that that line of communication open. We don't overuse written communication. If there's a policy and procedure that needs to go out to everyone, then yes, we'll send that out in an email. But if there's something that needs to be discussed or a decision that needs to be made, we try to get everyone in the room that's going to impact together, because it might be that one person that's not there that has a perspective that's missed. So verbal communication, and making it as short and concise as possible and keeping it on task. But meetings where it's in person and things are actually discussed and people who are able to give their input are in attendance and able to share their thoughts, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent.
Okay. Excellent tips. I was looking for something like, newsletter, social media, but what I heard was we really just talk to the people.
Yeah,
what a refreshing twist today.
Yeah, it is. Well, actually, newsletter is something that we do, and I will be honest, we fall a little short on that because, like I said, the written communication to us isn't as important as face-to-face. It's kind of like leaving your kid a note of chores to do versus talking to them about their homework and their chores. It's a little bit more personal, and it's a little bit more, you get better feedback, and you get better results when you actually talk about things rather than just throw them together. Now, that doesn't mean we don't have written plans, we don't have guidelines, we don't have performance reviews, we don't have metrics that we're going to follow. But when it comes down to making decisions, it's important to discuss them before you just throw them out there.
Great. A great tip today. I think that'll be one of my key takeaways. Well, look, as we kind of wrap up here, is there anything else about you or your firm that we haven't talked about that you'd kind of like to share with our audience?
I think that the only thing I would like to share is that for people who are out there looking for jobs, really look at the way that companies recruit and look at the way that the companies are conveying their message to employees. And I think that when you can talk to people within the company and find out how they feel about their jobs, and you're interviewing and you're finding out that the people who are interviewing you have been there for a long time and they really like it, right there is a good feeling for you. So I know there's a lot of people out of work right now, and I know there's a lot of HR people out there doing the same thing that I'm doing, trying to find good people. And I think the more you can not rely on that paper resume to tell you everything, talk to people more as much as you can, whether it's on the phone or in person, because sometimes that paper of the resume is not going to represent the person the best that person can do when you see them face to face.
Excellent tip. And Patty, people may have some questions. How do they get a hold of you? What's the best way to get in touch? Your website, phone number, what?
If it's job applicants, we do have our website, www.magnaflow.com, and it's spelled MAGNAFLOW. And the website's very exciting. Since we are in the automotive market, we've got a lot of cool spokesmodels and spokespeople that are on the website. We've got some sound clips and some videos of some cars. So if you're a car person, it's pretty exciting. But on the website, there's a link to jobs. So if you're interested in applying, anything that we have is posted out there. Even if it's not posted, go ahead and fill out the online application, and it comes straight to me. And that's a good way to get in touch with us in terms of a job. If you're looking for our product, it's also on the website. It's just it's a cool tool to use for people to look and see what's going on in the automotive market. And a lot of people have said really great things about our website. I happen to be biased, but I think it's a very exciting tool that we use for a lot of different uses, whether it's sales or distributors or potential customers or potential applicants.
Well, thank you very much. And I am not going to share with you or the audience how much time I spent listening to all your sound clips about different exhausts. But it was cool.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, we are kind of a forward-thinking company, and we're a little bit cutting edge in terms of how we come across. So it's, you know, I like to compare ourselves to sporting companies and, you know, clothing companies that are more current with the current scene right now, and that's kind of where we try to be with the automotive market.
It's certainly the impression that you and everybody else in your company has given me. So thank you very much for joining us today. Thank you for being a guest on our show, and welcome as a new member of our Critical Mass for Business community.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
Great. Have a nice evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, we've been listening to Patty Welsh of MagnaFlow, located right here in Rancho Santa Margarita, also in Oceanside, four different locations. And a great interview. If you've tuned in late, you definitely want to check out our website or octalkradio.net's website and listen to that, or download or listen to that that interview. It'll be posted early next week. Takeaways from today's discussion on my list here. You know, I'm really impressed with what Patty said about verbal communication. You know, we are so geared into talking about what social media can do for us, about how we communicate with people on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and maybe company newsletters. But what we heard from Patty is there is no replacement for meetings, whether they're one-on-one or whether it's groups or departments, to really communicate what's going on, and more importantly, to give the employees a chance, real time, virtual, live, to give feedback, to feel like they've been heard. So that was definitely a key tip that I got from today's lesson, a good reminder for me as I get obsessed here with new technology. The other thing is that from the tip I picked up from her today was in looking at recruiting and talking to people, boy, be sure to spend a lot of time in that interview process getting the applicant to talk about what they do, and don't rely on just the resume. You know, I think we all know that from the standpoint that we get suspicious of whether the resumes are slightly embellished or exaggerated. But Patty brings up the point that the other direction is not everybody's an expert at resume writing, and there may be a lot more to the person that isn't in their resume that would be very important for you to know and very critical in your making a decision to bring them into your company. So a great perspective. Again, she's added some interesting twists to what is the standards of how we tend to look at things. Well, we've talked about the Critical Mass books. Let me just remind you that, you know, that here at Critical Mass for Business, that we've been coaching executives and business owners for 17 years under the banner of the Coaching Perspective, which is part of the Critical Mass service group. We do individual coaching from top executives to the newest entry-level position. We coach people who want to sharpen their business skills. We do group coaching for work units, departments, and project teams, and workshops, communication, time management. And one of the things about our coaching that Patty mentioned is we work with all of our clients to identify at the front end of the coaching engagement what is the outcome, what is the result that they're looking for, and how can we set up a metric to measure that so that at the end of that coaching engagement that they can calculate that return on investment and feel good about the relationship more so than, hey, you were just nice guys to work with. But what did we add to their business and how did it impact the bottom line? Besides our coaching or as part of it, we do our CEO peer groups. The radio show that you're listening to is really an extension of our business practice, where we build CEO peer groups for executives here in Orange County, all under the brand Renaissance Executive Forums. And Rick and I are currently leading multiple CEO peer groups. And if you'd like to learn more about our peer groups or our coaching practice, I'd encourage you to check out our website, criticalmassforbusiness.com. And I just heard today that the new website is going to be up and running next week, so that's exciting. I can't wait to see it myself. And be sure to listen to us. You know, we're on the air here Tuesdays and Wednesdays and Thursdays at 4 o'clock. Tuesdays and Wednesdays, you'll listen to Rick as he interviews top business leaders here in Orange County. And in fact, on Thursdays at 3 o'clock, he starts an hour ahead of me and interviews some top business leaders from other parts of the country. Just a slight acknowledgement that we don't have everything here in Orange County, that maybe there's something to learn from people in other areas also. So we want to be sure to do that. Next week, great interview next Thursday. We're going to have Tom Weber of Sunrise Growers here to talk about some of the issues that they face in their company with HR. Can you imagine handling on a regular basis having to go from 40 employees to 300 employees with just 48 hours notice? Well, you need to tune in next week and listen to Tom as he talks about this. It's a recurring issue that they have to face in their business. And he's got some insights and some tips. Boy, we think our job is difficult, and we have to add two or three employees to the staff. But how about if you had to go from 40 to 300? Well, look, I hope that you've enjoyed our show today and that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can use to make better, more informed decisions. That's what we're all about, Rick and I. Our coaching practice and our peer groups, our books and our radio shows are all about giving you information that will help you make a better, more informed decision. And if you haven't registered yet, hey, today is the cutoff. Get on the internet there and go to our website and register for our executive conference, which will be next Tuesday at the Center Club here in Orange County. We're going to have the unveiling or the release of our new book, which we're really excited about, not just because we wrote it, but because we have 62 contributing authors, all of whom are among the top CEOs here in Orange County, who all have been on our radio show and been guests, and all who answered the question, what is your guiding principle? And so that's what the book is all about. It's definitely a must read. You want to pick it up and find out what's motivating, what's driving CEOs. What is it that they hold near and dear to their heart that helps them in those dark moments when we question, why did we ever get into this business? So be sure to sign up. So until the next show, I hope all your decisions move you in a positive direction. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to The Coaching Perspective, only on OCTalkRadio.net.